Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the... Hell, is there 31 days in July or 30? I think it's 31 days, so that'll make it the 31st day, the last day of July. Yeah, I'm right. I looked it up. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Programming note, if you're listening to this early enough in the morning or even early afternoon, I will be on Spicer & Company making a fool of myself tonight on Newsmax as part of their quiz. It was on a couple of weeks ago, and boy, I got like 2 of 5, 2.5 out of 5. I misunderstood the question. It was just a disaster. They're giving me another shot. So we shall see how that goes. It's on at like 6 and 9 Eastern on Newsmax TV. If you really just want to see a painting of mine hanging behind me, obscenely close to block out the cat tree that's really in the room that I'm in. Got an exciting interview for you today. John Lott. Yes, John Lott. There's nobody who knows more about crime and guns and statistics and real numbers than John Lott. So much of every debate is ruled by emotion, and it's wildly unproductive and counterproductive, and deliberately so. And so that's why I wanted to talk to John. He's also got a new book, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians and the Media Botched How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. You will learn a lot. John is a very smart man. Before we get to that, I want to take just a couple of minutes because I have to comment on Obama and his ridiculous speech at the Democratic National Convention. No, this speech would have been appropriate there, but at the John Lewis Memorial, the 7th or 8th or 19th, I don't know, there's only like 17 more John Lewis memorials to go before he's finally committed to the ground. John Lewis has gotten more memorial services, crowded memorial services, than many states have allowed their entire citizenry in this time. It's such a disgrace. But before we get to that, let me tell you about getthetea.com. Yeah, you get a little stopped up or you feel a little sluggish in the middle of the day and you're like, I eat right. I ate a lot of broccoli last night. What's going on? Well, there's a simple solution. Your insides are coated with waste, to put it bluntly. That's where getthetea.com comes from. Sure, I suppose you could go get a massive enema or something like that every couple of days. But why not drink something one cup a day that makes a difference, keeps you regular and keeps you cleaned out? Then you'll be able to absorb the nutrition from the food that you eat. You'll be able to actually digest it into your body rather than let it slide out. You go to getthetea.com. You order your favorite flavor of Life Change Tea, or what you think would be your favorite flavor if you've never had it. And boom, enter promo code Derek at checkout. You get free fast shipping. Can't beat that deal. And you'll thank me for it. It really does make a difference. And I like the taste, quite frankly. And you get a month's supply. So it's not like, oh my God, for one cup of tea? No. Every day, follow the instructions. Don't overdo it. Trust me. But follow the instructions. You'll be on your way to a little more pep in that step of yours. Getthetea.com for Life Change Tea. Enter promo code Derek. Click apply. Free fast shipping. Okay. The Wellstone Memorial Part 2. Has there been a funeral that Democrats haven't exploited? It's an honest, serious question where there's somebody who passes that Democrats just want to remember for who they were, not their causes, not the speeches that they get for carrying the, because they're being carried on TV, where they act like normal, decent human beings. Think back to the John McCain memorial. I thought it was over the top. It was far too long, but whatever. It was not political speeches where everybody's saying, this is the chance to get Trump. Let's do it. Now think back to the Elijah Cummings memorial where his wife started her campaign to replace him. She lost, thankfully. And you got other politicians and other hacks up there attacking the president. And then you smash cut to this, where Barack Obama gets up there and gives a campaign speech because he can. Do you think anybody in the mainstream media is going to criticize Barack Obama? You think anybody up there is going to say, well, this is, seems just wildly inappropriate, Mr. President. You shouldn't do this. That's not the way the left works. Listen, well, the people are going to be looking. Let's do this thing. It was so bad, reporters were even tweeting pictures of Obama in his mask. A guy named Edward Isaac DeVore tweeted out two pictures of Barack Obama in his mask. Why? Because, well, there weren't pictures of Donald Trump in a mask. So it's news. It shows that Barack Obama is better than Donald Trump. The first picture, he, by the way, Edward Isaac, hyphenated first name, Edward Isaac DeVore is apparently a staff writer at The Atlantic. He says, after Obama finished his eulogy and waved to the crowd on his way down the stairs, he reached into his pocket for a mask and put it on. And there's the screen capture from C-SPAN of Barack Obama putting his mask on. Then he says, with another picture, clearer view of Obama putting on his mask, which is plain black. He didn't capitalize black. Does that matter? Is that racist now in the new AP style? Look, I don't want to criticize anybody for their kink. Whatever you got to do, whatever you touch yourself to, I ain't going to judge you. But it is pretty sick the way that they went goo goo gaga over everything, this dumpster fire of a corrupt piece of crap. Oh, I'm so poor. I'm just an average guy. Your wife's making a fortune because of your job. Doesn't matter. I'm just a normal guy. Now you're worth $100 million. Yeah, you're going to public service. I was called to public service. And the giant golden-ass parachute you waited for at the end of it? Anyway, up in his speech, I have a couple of clips I want to play of Barry. I'm just going to play two for more of it, just because of time. The interview with John Lott is like 50 minutes long. So for time, I'm only going to play two. But the Week in Review, the obscenity-laced Week in Review, will be full of Obama quotes and colorful metaphors used to describe it from me, shall we say. Programming note, this is the test run for the obscenity-laced show on Saturday. I think I figured out how to post it to Patreon for the people who are Patreons there. So it's patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. I'm also, just in case, going to post it to the regular feed. So you get one more for free. The first two free. It's a double drug dealer model. And then you have to, then it'll be for Patreons only. I think I figured it out. I'm not super computer literate. If it ain't copy and paste, I can find a way to screw it up. But I believe I've checked every correct box. So we'll see if I can upload it after I record it and go from there. So this is the last one. If you want to hear the, you can hear the regular shows Monday through Friday. But if you want the commercial-free, obscenity-laced Week in Review, the way the news deserves to be talked about these days, you go to patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. And I know some of you don't want to use Patreon or whatever. It's just me. I can't set it up in 15. If I figured it out on Patreon, I'd be way ahead of the curve. But I suppose I could try to email it to you if you join. It's just $5 a month for four extra shows of obscenity, maybe five on some weekends, of obscenity-laced political analysis. The way it really, I'd watch this cable channel. Anyway, I want to play clips of Obama because he's such a damn disgrace. So let's get to it. shall we? Listen to this. Listen, this is a eulogy. This is a memorial. You're supposed to be talking about the person that you're memorializing. Instead, Barack Obama makes it about Donald Trump because Barack Obama is an asshole.
Bull Connor may be gone, but today we witness with our own eyes police officers kneeling on the necks of black Americans. George Wallace may be gone, but we can witness our federal government sending agents to use tear gas and batons against peaceful demonstrators.
And of course, the crowd of partisan hack barking seals claps in the hopes that he'll throw them a mackerel. Yeah, by the way, Bull Connor and George Wallace, Democrats, just by the way. And where is this string of police officers kneeling on the necks of black men? The only other person I've seen kneeling on the neck of anybody was of a white man who died in Texas 2 years earlier that didn't make a blip on the radar because he was white. Black lives matter, not all lives, not most lives, not even any other lives, not even really black lives, just certain black lives. Barack Obama is just trash. He's a little bitty gutter snipe. He's a really petty person who is upset that he is out of the public spotlight, and he wants to get his little puppet henchman Joe Biden elected, even though he knows and even Stevie Wonder could see that Joe Biden is unfit for the office. He's just not there. But this is a memorial. You would never know it was a memorial. By the way, the crowd was pretty densely packed in there. Not a lot of social distancing going on. Will that become a new hot spot for coronavirus? And will they have to find some pool where kids went to a couple months ago to blame it on? Against peaceful protesters. What an asshole. Oh, I'm going to have a lot more to say about this on Saturday's show. But what an asshole. Just a total asshole. Yeah, he misses John Lewis. He respects John Lewis so much. That's why I'm going to take a shit right here on his casket. Because this isn't about John Lewis. This is about my politics. That's all I really care about. There's more. And like I said, there'll be more on Saturday. But I want to play one more little clip of Barack Obama to just show what a pile of human garbage he is.
You may no longer have to guess the number of jelly beans in a jar in order to cast a ballot. But even as we sit here, there are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
What about the people getting sick listening to your ass spew this crap? Can we worry about them too? Because I'm more concerned about them. I love how the first black president, my God, perhaps our smartest president, our most amazing president, the media is still collectively rubbing their genitalia over this speech, how he sits there and says, look, there's no way black people and college students could get valid IDs. Yeah, sorry, but a college ID is not a valid form of ID for voter registration. Why? Because I, as somebody growing up in Michigan, could have gone to college anywhere in the country. Not that any of the universities would have had me, but if I wanted to pay and I had found one with a low enough bar to entry, I could have gone to school in New York, for say, just say. I'd go to New York. Well, I've got a college ID that says I'm a student at New York School of whatever. That doesn't mean I am registered to vote there. Doesn't mean I'm a citizen of New York. I can still be a citizen of Michigan and would have been. I was a citizen of Michigan for a little while when I moved to Maryland because I didn't get around to changing my driver's license because I didn't have a car. There was no point to it. And so I was voting absentee in Michigan. Why? Because I changed it pretty quickly, like within a year. But Why? Because that was where I was registered to vote. That was where my citizenship, my residency was. By the time it came around to doing my taxes the next year, I had to change it. But an election, I think, had happened then. So I did it absentee. That's just how it works. If you're in college and you go and spend 4 years in some state, or better part of 4 years with summers back in your home state, you are not a resident of that state. You are not a citizen of that state. You might be residing there, but you can change your residency and become a resident there, but then you can't vote in your former state. That's how it's supposed to work. That's why a college ID doesn't work for voter identification, because you don't have to prove where you live to get a college ID, and you can live in another state. The left pisses themselves going, oh, down in Texas, you know, that a federal firearms license is good enough to vote, but somehow a college ID isn't. Yeah, because you know you get a giant colonoscopy to get a federal firearms license. You know that you have to not only prove you are who you say you are, but you have to prove where you live to get a federal firearms license. You don't have to do any of that stuff for college. I've seen voting where it sure as hell seemed weird. First, if you want to see corruption in elections, go to a college town on election day in a state with same-day voter registration. You will see Democrats busing loads of kids. They're all like, oh my God, they're throwing people in vans. Criminals, wanted criminals, but they're throwing people in vans. Democrats will throw college kids in vans and say, come on, let's go register to vote. Bring your cell phone bill, or bring some kind of bill that comes to your college dorm that proves that you live there, has an address on it, and they will get you registered to vote. Now, many of those students, I guarantee you, have voted in their home states. But there's no instant check that says, hey, wait a second, I'm trying to register you here to vote in Montana, say, just picking that one at random, because that's where I saw it. There's no instant background check that says, hey, you've already registered to vote in Missouri, and you've actually already voted in Missouri absentee. None of that. So you get to vote in two states, or could theoretically vote in two states. It's fraud. That's a felony. It's nearly impossible to prove and find and so on and so forth, and there'd be too many cases for them to go after, but it happens all the time. That's why a college ID should not ever be a valid form of identification. Plus, you know, you can fake those things pretty easily. Maybe a little bit harder now, but they can still be faked, because there's a bunch of underage kids who are suddenly 21 on their college IDs. Return to the point that Barack Obama is a gutter snipe, and he used this memorial, the 15th memorial for John Lewis, as a chance to take swipes at President Trump and to take swipes at the country. God, if I had his kind of money and I had that kind of contempt for this country, I'd leave. I'd be gone. You couldn't get me to stick around. But this is the cow that he's milking. And he wants even more money because he cares about poor people or something like that, or Black Lives Matter or something like that. Just don't try to knock on his door, because the Secret Service will beat the living shit out of you. Just the hypocrisy drives me nuts. Barack Obama was always a disappointment, but now he's just something at a new level. Look, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. Easy to enter. All you have to do is text the word Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K. Text that to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Okay, let's get to John Lott and the truth about guns in his book, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control, available now. Okay, as we do every Friday, we are joined by, we like to pick the brain of somebody a lot smarter than us. And today, it's probably one of the smartest brains we've had on the show. We have him on, had him on quite a bit. It's John Lott. He is the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center and author of the new book, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for taking the time.
Great to talk to you again, Derek.
Congratulations on the book. Before we get into the book and the news of the day, how have you been holding up? I know you asked me before we were recording. I was waiting to ask you on air or on tape. How are you holding up during the pandemic? I wasn't just being a jerk.
The fact that I was asking you questions on how you're doing, but you weren't asking me, I'm not supposed to take that. Wasn't supposed to take that personally.
That's right. It's a good cover, isn't it? It's like I just realized I was a jerk.
Good recovery on it. No, I'm doing fine. I life is pretty normal for me in the sense that you put me in front of a computer and I can run regressions and stuff like that. I can pretty much do almost any place. So I'm just a happy camper as far as that goes. And, you know, I have interesting people to talk to on the phone. I'm happy.
Yeah, that's the beauty of working from home is you just now you save on commuting and probably lunch costs and everything else. So
right. Well, the Crime Prevention Research Center, we have six people that work, but we have tried to cut costs over time by not having like a regular office that everybody goes to anyway. I mean, you got to pay for your house or whatever anyway, so people just work from home.
You know, that's one of the things I think is going to be a real shock to the system after this is over is the commercial real estate business is going to have real problems because a lot of businesses are realizing they either have far too much square footage or they don't need any square footage to be just as productive.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm sure there are jobs where it makes a big difference for people to come in contact with others in close proximity, but you know, you have Skype and, you know, Zoom and everything else. And a lot of the reasons why people want to live in places like New York City are going to be gone with the restaurants and the movie and the theaters and cultural stuff. I'm not sure how a lot of that's going to recover, at least not right away. And then the question is, why do people want to live there? I think I've talked to real estate agents in places like Montana, and they're telling me that they're getting calls from people in California who are buying houses sight unseen, you know, other than just over the internet. You know, so you have people plunking down $1 million for a house in Montana. Particularly for higher income individuals, I think a lot of them can go just because of the nature of their job. They can work lots of places if you're just kind of more intellectual type stuff. If you're a service worker or what have you, I think there's a lot less flexibility for those individuals.
It is. It's true. And it's bizarre. It's just unfortunately that a lot of those people like locusts when they eat all the plants, eat all the foliage and go, hey, there's nothing left to eat here. Let's move on. They will bring their voting patterns with them.
Yeah,
and
no,
that was what they were fleeing.
Yeah, I've seen data for Texas. And when people move from California to Texas, for the first election, they vote pretty much exactly the same way as they did before they moved. But by about the fourth election that they're there, they've moved most of the way towards being what regular Texans are. I guess the big concern is you don't want too many moving right away because then they won't learn what it's like to be in another type of state.
It's true, but hell, enough people leave California, maybe Republicans can win California again. Who knows?
I think you're going to have like a third of the population leave.
I was promised they'd fall in the ocean when I was a kid, so, you know, I'm still holding out hope for that. Whatever happened to that
transit or the Pacific shelf out there. Let's talk about gun control myths, how politicians, the media, and botched studies have twisted the facts on gun control. John, you have been studying crime and gun issues forever and better than anybody. You look at news coverage on a daily basis, and it's continually wrong. Even the reporters on the beat get basic facts wrong. I mean, what was it? The USA Today had a graphic with an AR-15 with a chainsaw attachment or a chainsaw bayonet or something. The people
you
who
don't
cover,
have a gun like that yet? You're way not, out of the times. I'm amazed. I thought you, of all people, would be right up there with the latest attachments for AR-15s.
I'm holding out for the lightsaber bayonet, personally. But if somebody put out a graphic with a lightsaber bayonet, there's a good possibility that some reporter somewhere would go, my God, look what they're doing now to make this even more deadly. Yeah. What percentage of the people who cover this issue do you think actually understand the issue? When I was in health policy at the Heritage Foundation, most of the reporters were like most of the Republicans, a mile wide, an inch deep. And so they could easily be spun and manipulated by the left. It seems to me that's the case when it comes to gun rights.
Yeah, I think it's at least as bad for gun issues. Look, I mean, most reporters, they get assigned a story at the morning meeting, you know, 9:30 or 10 in the morning. They have a few hours to put it together, which basically means they spend the first half hour or 40 minutes or whatever doing Google searches on people. So I suppose that's the first area that Google has an impact in terms of its biased search engines that are there. And then, they go and they call up a couple people or a few people, and then they throw the story together and they got to have it written up by, let's say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon so the editors can look at it and can go through copy editing and what have you. For most issues, I mean, I guess you hope that people who kind of specialize in certain topics over time get to be experts in areas, but I'm not really sure that's the case. And there's so much misinformation that's put out, you know, Bloomberg, you know, when he's spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars on putting out information, you know, it's kind of a flood of things. And plus, most reporters are fairly liberal to begin with. And I think that comes with a certain set of biases. You take the example I often give is look at something like healthcare, since you were bringing that up. You have Obamacare. Liberals really don't trust individuals to make decisions on things like what type of health insurance they should get. Under right. Obamacare, everything you could think of is covered. You have no choices on what's covered. Pretty much the only option you have is the size of the deductible that you're going to get. And that's one reason why insurance premiums soared so much when Obamacare was introduced. The problem that you have is that's the way they view things generally. I mean, if you don't trust people to go and make decisions on what type of health insurance they're going to have, are you going to trust them with a weapon? I mean, in some sense, whether you trust individuals to make decisions or not, kind of the ultimate thing of trust is whether you're going to let them have a weapon or not. And, you know, the irony is right now, the liberals don't trust anybody to have a weapon, including the police. You have all this discussion about defunding the police. You have discussions about replacing them with social service workers. I mean, just on July 8th, you had Joe Biden have this interview where he was being asked about replacing police officers with social workers. And he sounded like he was all in on it. I mean, the example that the reporter gave or the journalist gave Biden was the Brooks shooting in Atlanta, the one that occurred in the Wendy's parking lot where this inebriated guy had passed out in his car in the drive-through lane at the Wendy's restaurant there. And the journalist had said, well, you know, we wouldn't have had the shooting if we had merely replaced police officers when, you know, for calls with a social worker and a tow truck driver. And, you know, it's, if you're going to replace police officers with social workers for calls involving crimes, it's not really clear where you're going to have police officers still be involved. But, you know, anybody who actually watched the video knows the police officers were extremely courteous when they went to the guy doing the sobriety check. It was obvious that he was intoxicated. They went through everything properly, following the book perfectly, right up until the time, and courteous right up until the time that he attacked them. I mean, this guy was at least one head higher than either of the two police officers. And he must have weighed like 70 pounds more than the guys. He attacked them and was able to steal the stun gun from one of the officers, fired one shot at one of the officers and was aiming the stun gun at the other officer when the officer shot him. But they followed everything perfectly by the book. And yet the officer was fired and charged with felony murder.
He's facing the death penalty too, yeah, which is what. Talk a little bit about, because you're the brain I trust on this. It's the Ferguson effect coupled with everything that's going on now, and an incident like that where I think a fair-minded person would look at that and say it's a shame. It should never have come to that. It's a shame the guy died, but you understand why it happened, and then the increase in crime and the police going, unless I'm told to do something, I'm not doing it, because every time a cop gets out of a car, there's 15 people there with their iPhones filming everything in their faces going, you can't do this, you can't do that, getting right up there basically trying to narrate and badger these police officers. What does that do to morale and to crime?
Destroys it. But look, The case in Minneapolis is a sad case, but, you know, there's no evidence that that I know of that the individual was a racist. He could just be simply a bad cop that was there and not behaving properly. But you have things like the Brooks case. You have officers, as I say, who, as far as I can tell, and as far as I can tell from other commentary, everybody believes, except for the prosecutor there, that the officer behaved by the book in that case. And yet, as you say, he's facing the death penalty. You know, the Ferguson case that you raise, there's no racism involved. Michael Brown had attacked the police officer while the police officer was in his car. He had reached through the open driver's side window of the car, punching the officer, trying to grab his gun. In fact, the gun fired once with inside the car there. It was at that point that Michael Brown started running away. The officer got out, told him to stop. Brown turned around and charged the officer. The officer only at that time fired the gun at Michael Brown. There was no hands up. I mean, we still hear in these current riots the slogan, hands up, don't shoot. It's just amazing to me how much of the riots that we have are probably the fault of the media. So I'll give you an example. We've done research on police shootings. And I went back through the data that we had gathered. And what I found was that when a white officer shoots a black suspect, over 38% of those cases get national news coverage. When a black officer shoots a black suspect, you're talking about less than 9% of those cases get national news coverage. And when they do get national news coverage reporting the race of the officer and the suspect, it gets just a fraction of the national news coverage that you see for a white officer shooting a black suspect. And when a black officer shoots a white suspect, that doesn't get any national news coverage in terms of reporting the race of the officer and the suspect involved. And the thing is, when you go and look at the data, the rate that black officers shoot black suspects is actually slightly higher, though not statistically significantly different, than white officers shooting black suspects. But you would never know that from listening to the national media. It really creates a real disservice. It creates this impression that you have a problem with white officers doing shootings, and that you have the problem with the...
I think your phone is ringing or something.
I apologize. With, it was just a congressman calling me, so I call him later. you know, it really creates this problem. I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people who are doing these riots are, a lot of them really believe the media narrative here.
You do have people on TV, journalists, with the authority that we as a society sort of imbue them with. You think they're telling you the truth or some semblance of it. And you see people constantly say things like it's open season on young black men. Police are killing us every day. We're seeing this. But in fact, it's not anywhere close to every day. It's not even every week. It's barely every month. And there's more often than not, like you said, a white person being killed by police officers that gets no coverage whatsoever. The egregious case being out in, I think it was Las Vegas or maybe San Antonio, where the guy's laying in the hallway with his hands up begging, "Don't shoot me, I don't have a gun." And they shot him any, police shot him anyway. That didn't get any national coverage, and nobody was convicted of that. It has to be deliberate, right? It's not just narrative at this point, because the people reporting this had to have at least accidentally come across some numbers that show the truth.
Yeah, well, you would think, but again, it maybe gets back partly to your earlier point about them not getting detail, you know, not having detailed knowledge about these things. But, you know, I think a lot of the media is affected by the media coverage on these things. The fact that they hear stories by others on going reporting that white officers are shooting blacks, and that's what they hear, I think colors their views. I remember when I was doing one of my earlier books, The Bias Against Guns, I had seen a story where a 10-year-old had gone and saved his grandmother from a gang leader who had a box cutter to her throat and was threatening to kill her. A very heroic type of case. And I had noticed that that story had gotten hadn't gotten picked up by other newspapers. It was buried in the back of a newspaper. And I had noticed that that same reporter had a story of a taxi cab driver who had gotten killed by a fare that had gotten picked up by like 26 newspapers around the country. And so I called up the reporter and I said, you know, could you kind of explain to me what's going on here? Because I would think that if the old news saw that if, you know, dog bites man is not much of a news story, but man bites dog, you know, the rare cases would be it. I mean, in many years, a taxi cab driver is the most dangerous job in the United Wow. States. And also, you know, why wasn't her story about the 10-year-old on the front page? Why was the taxi cab driver on the front page and the other one was buried deep in the newspaper and only had like 300 words? And her comment to me was that they were concerned that they didn't want to give the impression that letting kids get access to guns would be a good thing, even though in this case it had saved the grandmother's life. And the thing is, so I went through, and I had found like, I came across like 10 stories that year where young kids had used guns to save people's lives. And none of those got much news coverage. And I called up some of the other reporters, and I got basically the same thing. And I think what happens is that they only they hear these other stories about kids being shot with guns. If a kid gets a shot with a gun, you're going to get dozens or hundreds of news stories across the country about that, particularly if it's involving, you know, another child firing the gun. And that gives people the real impression that these things are happening constantly all the time. I mean, few people would know that for kids under age 10, you're talking about in any given year something in the 30 range for a number of children who are accidentally shot to death by a gun. And you wouldn't know that two-thirds of that involve adult males, usually in their mid to late 20s, who are drug addicts or alcoholics, who have a criminal record. These are not normal people that are doing the shots. The risk of a child dying from an accidental gunshot in the home is about akin to those children dying from lightning strikes. But people are generally afraid of this. When my kids were growing up, because of who I was and because I was known for my work, the friends that my kids had at school, their parents wouldn't let their kids play at our house because they said, you know, the lots must have guns over there and it wouldn't be safe for our kids to play at a house that have guns and stuff like that. And, you know, you try to talk.
Saved you a lot of cleanup.
It did. The kids got to play over at the other people's houses rather than ours. But
that goes to your book. And the question I have is right there in the title of your book, the subtitle, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. Is the order in which that bastardization of reality the reverse of the way they're listed in your title? Is it the botched studies that then inform the media that then pressure the politicians, or is there another order in which they fall, or is there no particular order?
You know, I've actually thought about that question myself a few times, and it's a good question. I think probably the botched studies and the media kind of vie for each other, which one's the most, you know, starts the ball rolling on these things. And I think part of it is with the media, it just has to do with, their own biases to begin with, kind of like what we're talking about earlier, about who do you trust to make decisions on things. But I think in the gun issue, the botched studies have gotten a lot more prominence over the last decade. And a lot of it just has to do with the funding that they've been getting. Bloomberg's been spending hundreds of millions of dollars on funding these types of studies. The federal government's gotten involved. You know, one thing, one of the myths, the big gun control myths basically goes through about three dozen myths. And one of them has to do with what academics believe on the issue of guns and gun control. And this last year, I finished a survey that's talked about in the book with Arthur Berg at Harvard and Gary Mauser at Simon Fraser. And we surveyed the largest number of academics who actually have published peer-reviewed research on guns and crime. The thing is, most of them are very skeptical of gun control, but it's divided into three groups. You have criminologists and economists are very skeptical of gun control. They think the number one way to deal with mass public shootings, for example, is to get rid of gun-free zones. Public health people, the same people who are involved in putting out these estimates on the number of people who are going to die from the coronavirus and what have you, they are much more favorable towards gun control. And they're the ones who are getting all the funding. About 94% of the federal government funding goes to public health people. Congress explicitly puts out money for public health. If you go and you read Biden's statements that, you know, his report that he just put out on his policy positions, he explicitly talks about guns as a public health issue. And, I've been dealing with these public health people for years, but they're about as accurate on the gun issue as they have been on lots of issues dealing with coronavirus.
Coronavirus cost projections, everything. Public health experts are some of the they're right up there with just regular economists at predicting the GDP growth or unemployment rate. You'd never hear the phrase, the number came out exactly as economists expected it. As always, much greater than economists expected, or much worse than economists expected. And when it comes to something, is it the emotional appeal that allows so much of this to go through, that it overrides logic completely, in addition to the bastardized studies? Or is it the emotional appeal that's causing the bastardized studies? If you go in looking for something, for example, you're probably going to find it. And that doesn't mean that you're right. It just means that you confirmed your bias.
Right. Well, my previous book, The War on Guns, I kind of went through a number of public health studies because I think what people have understood is that the old battle on gun control wasn't working, and that what they need to do is they couldn't just do this on kind of a political battle. They had to try to change people's underlying views about guns. And by essentially spending huge amounts of money, which I can't even figure out how they can spend the amount of money they do on these studies, and the media reporting, that the completely uncritical media reporting that goes on with regard to these studies, they think it has an impact. I mean, if you constantly hear story after story about new study that comes out that shows the dangers of guns, they think they can have an impact on people's views. And I think there is evidence that it has an impact on people's views. And a lot of it just has to do with, because when I went through the war on guns, one of the things I was just trying to show is how incredibly poorly done and dishonest I think a lot of the public health studies are. You'd have studies that would go and claim that as gun ownership increases in a state, you'd have more police shootings. First of all, they wouldn't even measure gun ownership per se. They would look at some proxy for it, and the proxy would be the percentage of suicides which are committed with guns, which by my mind is telling you more about demographics and things like that than necessarily the percentage of the population that owns guns. But beyond that, you would know that they would have tested it in a certain way to begin with, the way everybody would have set up the regression model. And then they didn't get the result they wanted, and so they changed it. You could just tell it. I mean, somebody who's done research for a while could see it. Because when I would rerun the regressions the way anybody would normally do them, you got the opposite result, that more gun ownership was associated with fewer police being shot, and it was statistically significant. And so I don't want to get too much in the weeds, but I'll just give you a little bit on this. So when you look across lots of states over time, the reason why you do that is because you want to have lots of experiments. You know, the two ways that people normally would look at it otherwise would be what we'd call time series, where you're looking at one place over time, or purely cross-sectional, where you're looking at many places across places, but at one point in time. And there are real limits to that. If you're only looking at one place, you only have one experiment, and you can't really account for many different factors then that could explain the change. If you have lots of states over lots of years, and they're changing their rules in many different years, there are lots of experiments there, and hopefully you can then account for more things than you have experiments. And so hopefully you can begin to account for things. But what we do when we run those regressions is we try to pull out the average differences across places. You know, you don't want to just compare California with Idaho, because there are lots of differences across there. You try to account for income and what have you, but you also want to say, what's the average crime rate in Idaho or the average crime rate in California before they changed the law? Because you want to see, did it go up or down relative to what it was before when they changed the law? You just don't want to say Idaho has this law and California doesn't, so therefore the law must lower the crime rate because Idaho already had a low crime rate to begin with. You understand?
Yeah.
And so, but they didn't have that in there. They didn't have pulling out the average differences that were there.
Is it tunnel vision? Is it just they don't, it doesn't occur to them? Is it the education has changed?
Well, it's a function of different things. It's a function, one, I don't think people in public health, at least initially, had the training and statistics that people in other disciplines do. But I think when you see things like what I was just describing, you look at it and you say, look, everybody knows how you're supposed to run this. Everybody knows what you're supposed to account for here. You know that they ran that to begin with. And then when they didn't get the results they wanted, they changed it. And it's just so biased that in public health, they have no problems getting studies published that you would believe any referee in economics or criminology would say, you know, this is weird. I don't understand why you're doing it this way. Nobody else does it this way. You can't do it this way. And that would have been the end of the discussion. They would have told them to redo it. You know, if you want to resubmit the paper, fine. But they would have made them redo it.
But okay, let me ask you, what would you say is the biggest gun control myth out there that people are inundated with on a regular basis? Something that we hear all the time, we see reported, that is just sort of regurgitated by talking heads, that is patently false.
You know, I don't know what the biggest one is. I mean, I can just give you a broad overrange of a few right away. And one is
It's how people about what's in your book, basically.
How people should behave when they're confronted by a criminal. Time after time, you'll see news reports indicating that behaving passively would have been the safest course of action for people to take. And that's simply false. There's a kernel of truth to it, but it's very misleading. The kernel of truth is if you compare active resistance, well, passive behavior to all forms of active resistance lumped together, passive behavior is slightly safer. But the reason why it's very misleading and dangerous is you're lumping together all sorts of active resistance, everything from yelling and screaming or using your fists or running away at one end to a gun. For a woman, yelling or screaming or using her fists or trying to run away actually turn out to be fairly dangerous for her because she's almost always facing a stronger young male criminal doing the attack. The safest course of action by far is to have a gun. But when you mix all those together, you're losing those differences that are there. Other myths involve things like mass public shootings. I think the entire gun control debate that we have right now would be dramatically different if even once in a while the media would report that we've had a yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns are banned. 94% of the mass public shootings take place where civilians were banned from having guns. These attackers may be crazy in some sense, but they're not stupid. They want to try to go and get media attention. They know the more people they kill, the more media attention that they're going to get. And they know if they go to a place where people are defenseless, they're going to be more successful in killing people. You know, even if you have a police officer on the scene, police officers have an incredibly difficult job. Having somebody in uniform is kind of like putting them there with a neon sign saying, shoot me first. Because if these killers arrive on the scene, they have huge strategic advantages. If they believe that the only person with a gun is the officer, the first person they're going to kill is the officer, and then they'll have free rein to go after other people that are there. You know, there are other issues here. There are cases that occur all the time where people with permanent concealed handguns stop what, according to the police, would have been mass public shootings. But they don't get national coverage. There was a case just a little bit over a week ago in Indiana where a police captain said that she believed that if it wasn't for the presence of a concealed carry permit holder, many people would have been killed. He was driving by in his car. His car just happened to be hit by one of the bullets that were fired. He got out and was able to, with his permanent concealed handgun, stop the attack. One of the chapters I have in Gun Control Myths goes through literally dozens of cases over recent years where mass public shootings have been stopped by concealed carry permit holders, where police have said that if it wasn't for the presence of the permit holder, many people would have died, and presumably then it would have gotten national or international coverage. Over the 5 years that I look at there, you literally find only two cases that got national news coverage. And the national coverage botched both of the stories completely, getting backwards. One example was, everybody remembers the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh. Just a few days after that, there was an attack at a Kroger grocery store in Louisville, Kentucky. The attacker had gone into the grocery store, started shooting blacks. The quote that got the attention of, you know, the national TV networks and the national news was the killer went to one of the customers and said, "Whites don't shoot whites." And the way, you know, Meet the Press and others played it was this racist was assuring this other white, this white customer who was, they both were white, that he had nothing to worry about because they both were white and he wasn't going to shoot them. What was left out of the quote was the beginning of the quote, which was the murderer said, "Please don't shoot me. Whites don't shoot whites." The customer had a permanent concealed handgun and he was pointing the gun at the murderer. And rather than the murderer assuring the customer that the murderer wasn't going to also shoot the customer, the murderer was begging the customer not to shoot the murderer.
That's a slightly different version than you get from Chuck Todd.
Right. Well, in fact, up until that point, I've been able to social media kind of communicate with Chuck Todd. We both were following each other on Twitter, and I was able to, you know, send him private messages back and forth on this. And I would listen to the Sunday morning talk shows fairly religiously. And he spent like 5 minutes on the story. And I wrote Chuck and I said, "Look, you know, I think you've missed the first part of this person's quote here. You know, I understand why you may have given the New York Times and all these other places have only included the part of the quote that you used. But if you look at the local media and here are some links, here's the beginning part of the quote. And I think it completely changed it." Because what Chuck and other people in the media were doing was basically playing up the racist angle. And I was saying, not only do you have a concealed carry permit holder stopping it, but you have a white coming to the rescue of blacks. So while you do have this racist there going and killing people, you also have kind of the anti-racist angle here too, where even though this customer who was white was assured that he wasn't in danger, he still felt it was important for him to stop, try to stop this attacker. They exchanged gunfire. The murderer was seriously wounded. He got in his car, drove about a mile down the road before he passed out, and the police were able to apprehend him at that point. But I sent the information to Chuck. He unfollowed me on Twitter, and he never corrected the story.
Oh, yes, the dogged pursuit of the truth from the Ginger Avenger that we've come to expect over there at NBC News. Now, let me ask you this, John Locke, because just this week or maybe the end of last week, the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, said unchallenged, I believe on CNN, that the guns in Chicago, the reason that there's violence in Chicago is 60 to 70% of the guns come rolling into Chicago are being smuggled in from other places where there are no background checks. You can buy any kind of gun that you want And that's why there's guns. That's why there's gun violence in Chicago. I tend to believe that explains the
low murder rates in Houston and Dallas and in Indianapolis and other places that don't have the rules that she wants.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think the inanimate object is responsible for the acts.
There's a simple reason why Chicago has the problems that it does, and that is the arrest rate for murders in Chicago is, in 2018 was 13%. It's just mind-boggling. That means 13% of murders in Chicago result in an arrest. That's on average. I'm sure for gang murders, it's even lower, and conviction rates are even lower. So you're probably talking about something in the single digits in terms of gang murders in Chicago resulting in convictions. Well, guess what? If you're almost you're very unlikely to end up being convicted and serve any jail time for committing a murder in Chicago, you're going to go and commit more murders there. It's not rocket science.
And what I find bizarre is these politicians never try to pierce the culture of silence, the culture of if you talk to police, you're a snitch. You know, if somebody kills a one-year-old, as we've seen happen recently, in broad daylight, somebody knows who that is. But nobody wants to talk to police. It's always about the inanimate object. If people were encouraged to talk to police, there's a very small percentage of the population who's actually committing these violent crimes. Right. If you could get them off the streets, then you would see a dramatic decrease in crime, would you not?
Yeah, no, that's the point I'm making. You want to, if you make it riskier for criminals to commit crime, they're going to commit less crime. Your issue that you're bringing up is an important one about why people don't talk to police about the evidence that they know. And if you think that there, or you see that there is like less than a 10% probability that a gang member is going to end up in jail for committing murder, guess what? You're going to be reticent to go and testify against the guy, because you're going to be worried that he is still going to be around. You know, maybe his other gang members might create problems for you too. But you're going to be worried that he's going to be able to be still out there to go and get you. If I was mayor of Chicago and given the huge problems that they have, I would be begging Trump to go and try to help out. I wouldn't be going and calling him a racist. Who do they think is being harmed by these crimes? It's poor blacks. Where are the riots occurring? They're occurring in heavily black areas. Some of these are black-owned businesses. The people who primarily work in these areas are black. The people who primarily shop in these areas where the stores are being destroyed are black. You know, if they really cared about these people, they would be begging Trump to come in and go and help rather than going and calling him a racist for trying to get things under control. But the thing is, these politicians in Chicago are responsible for the low arrest rate. They've had all these politically correct decisions that they've made that have shackled the police. I'll just give you one example that Rahm Emanuel agreed to when he was mayor with the ACLU. Every time a police officer talks to a civilian, we're not talking about arrest forms, we're just talking about every time a police officer talks to a civilian, they have to fill out 2 legal-sized pages of forms that talk about who they talked to, why they talked to them, where they talked to them, what they talked about, in excruciating detail that's there. And that does multiple things. One is, if you're a police officer and you talk to 4 people in the morning, your whole afternoon is taken up filling out paperwork. Plus, it makes it so that you're less likely to want to go and talk to civilians. You're talking before about getting people to go and talk to the police. Well, the police don't even want to talk to people, because anybody that they talk to, if you have a crime scene and you have multiple witnesses there and you talk to 7 or 8 people, it's like the next day is filled, taken up filling out forms. And
What is the justification for that, aside from discouraging police from wanting to talk to people?
Well, they used to have like about a 4x5 card that they had to fill out, or a 3x5 card worth of information. But the ACLU accusing the police of racism there wanted to have data on why the police talked to people, because they were accusing the police of bothering blacks disproportionately. And so they wanted to, I don't think they've ever done anything. I've never heard of anything that they've done with all this information that they've acquired. But guess what? If you have murders occurring in heavily black areas, who are the people who are most likely to be witnesses? Who are the people who are most likely to be around? Who are the people who are going to be the relatives of the deceased? Who are you going to be talking to? You're going to be talking to overwhelmingly black areas. And that's where you want to put the police, where the crimes are. That's the other thing that Rahm Emanuel and Lightfoot have done. They move police from the areas where the crimes are to other areas. This whole debate about defunding the police, in some sense, Chicago has been removing police from doing their jobs for a while.
It really almost seems like it has to be by design, because it doesn't make any sense otherwise. Unless there, incompetence, it can't be that incompetent. It has to be deliberate at some point. And it just...
With Rahm Emanuel, I'll give you one other thing that he did. He closed two of the police bureaus in the two highest murder rate parts of the city. And the reason why he did that was, when he first ran for mayor, he made promises to constituents like on the Gold Coast side there, mm-hmm. and the north side near the lake, and that he would put more police resources over there. And so they had to come from someplace. Now, the police will still go and solve the crimes in those high murder rate places, but if an officer, if a detective, has to drive a half hour, you know, each way to go and deal with the crime, they're just not going to be able to deal with it as well as if it's a few minutes away from the office there.
Right, and there's not going to be the deterrent factor that there are police nearby to maybe stop you from firing the gun in the first place, because it would echo off of the throughout the neighborhood. They have to be called, and it's just a disaster. And John Lott sorts it all out. Last question for you, John, about gun control myths, how politicians, the media, and botched studies have twisted the facts on gun control. As somebody reads this book, lays it down after they finish the last page and goes to sleep, what thought do you want to stick with them in the morning when they wake up?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess I want them to be a lot more skeptical consumers of what they hear in the media all the time, in these studies that are done. I really think there's a lot of claims out there in the media that really endanger people's lives. You know, I think this election that we have coming up is the most important election that we've had. And I know people have said that in the past, but if you take just the gun issue, you take the Supreme Court, for example, there were 10 gun cases that the Supreme Court was considering this year. Some of them had been around for 2 years. They ended up not taking any of them. And from talking to clerks on the court, basically what I was told is that the four Republican appointees who wanted to take it up were worried that Roberts would go the other way, just as he's gone on DACA, just as he's gone on religious freedom cases, First Amendment cases, just as he's gone on Obamacare, just as he's gone on a whole range of other issues that are there. And Roberts seems to have this view that he will punish justices who grant cert, who grant a hearing to cases that he views as controversial. And that doesn't strike me as somebody who promised that they'd be calling balls and strikes on it, on these
issues. Oh, yeah, you can promise I'll call balls and strikes, but at the slightest hint of a water droplet, I'm calling it on account of rain.
It's more than just calling the game. It's like, if you ask to have the game called on the count of rain, I'm going to give the win to the other side or something like that. And so right now, you have people talk about all the judges that Trump has gotten confirmed. The thing is, with 200 confirmations, he's just brought the courts into rough balance. Democrats control the circuit courts in 24 states and the District of Columbia, which is considered the second most important court. And by the way, how important Democratic control may be shown very quickly, because the Flynn case is going to be heard by en banc by the entire court. They're going to review Naomi Rao's decision in the 3-judge panel that they have. And Democrats solidly control the D.C. circuit. By the way, Naomi was, I'll take a little bit of pride, Naomi was a student of mine for 3 classes at the University of Chicago. But anyway, and I hope she makes it to the Supreme Court one of these days. But the you have a situation where the Republicans control the circuit courts in 26 states. And the thing is, the states that the Democrats control the circuit courts are the ones that are passing all these nutty gun control laws. And the courts in those states pretty much say, you know, any gun control law you want is fine with us. And so if the only way you're going to be able to control California or New York, because they're gone politically, it's not like the conservative Republicans are going to take over California unless, as you were talking about before, a third of the people leave California. And they're, I hate to see what happens to the rest of the country where they go. But, you know, you're going to have to rely on the courts to protect individual rights. And the only way you're going to get that is if Trump's reelected. I mean, with all these judges, he's just brought the courts into rough balance politically. And you know who Biden's going to appoint? I mean, look, the Democratic nominees vote in lockstep on First Amendment and Second Amendment issues. And the two Trump appointees, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, have both indicated on the Second Amendment that they think it's high time that the court look at this issue again. It's been 10 years, but Roberts is the one who's holding everything up.
It's terrifying. I knew some people involved in the Heller case, and well, not involved, but interested, and they were upset that it was going to the Supreme Court because they were afraid of losing, which is sad because the Second Amendment is pretty unambiguous. Anyway, John Lott, the new book, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. It's available now everywhere books are sold, on Amazon and all that good stuff. Thanks for taking the time today, John.
Oh, no, thank you very much. I think this is one of my best books. Barnes & Noble and Amazon are the places it's available. And our website, for people who are interested in learning more about these things, is crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org.
Go there, check it out, pick up the book.
Thank you, John Lott. Again, his book, Gun Control Myths, How Politicians, the Media, and Botched Studies Have Twisted the Facts on Gun Control. And all the, God, that guy's so smart. You can ask him about anything, really, and he knows it. Thank you, guys, for listening. Don't forget the obscenity-laced show tomorrow. It'll be the last one that's free and available to everybody, and as long as I get it right. I got to do a test, and this is the test. So it'll also be available at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, or at least should be, fingers crossed. And then we can get this show on the road. Thank you to everybody who donates and supports the show through that. I deeply, deeply appreciate it. And lastly, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. I've said it before, I'll say it again, you got to enter. He wants to make sure that the lucky winners are his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, because this is definitely an opportunity you don't want to miss. This offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you are one of them. All you have to do is text my name, Derek, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's D-E-R-E-K to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great again for 4 more years, please. Yes, this message was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Thank you guys for listening, supporting the show. You can email me, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com, so on and so forth. You know all of this. If it's your first time, welcome. Now you know this as well. The Obscenity Lathe show will be available tomorrow, and then we'll be back to normal. I can't say obscenity less, but less obscenity shows on Monday. Have as good a weekend as humanly possible.